It's time. It's time to open your eyes. It's time to open your mind. It's time to grow up and face reality. It's time to lock and load because it's Meat Trapper time. Hello everyone, and welcome to episode number 201 of Meat Trapper Radio. So it's good to be on the other side of our bicentennial episode here. And if you didn't hear last week's episode, be sure and check it out. It's gotten a lot of good response, and that was something that I was very glad to see. So what are we going to do tonight? We're going to talk about a lot. I'm going to share some information from one of our newest Patreon members, Mauricio, who is from Uruguay and currently lives in Spain. We're going to talk about some economic stuff that's going on in the country, and it's going to tie into what he is sharing or what he shared with me via email. And I don't think he'll mind me sharing some of his thoughts. We are going to talk about fish traps. We're going to hear from Barry on his experience and advice using the Z-trap. And he's got some great stuff on where and how to deploy it and when to deploy it for optimal results. And he's had times where he's catching up to 50 brim at one soaking on that trap. So we're going to hear from him. Let's see. What else do we have coming up? We're going to hear from Ken a little bit. He sent me a great email following up on the slow glow hunting lights that we had discussed in a previous episode. He had a very interesting and exciting night hunt, and he did a great job on that. So we're gonna hear how his hunt went and how those slow glow night hunting lights work. If you're not familiar with them, or if you missed that episode, they're hunting lights rather than coming on all at once. They sort of when an animal comes into motion and sets off the sensor, the green or the red light starts to slowly glow, so it's not a sudden scare to them. And you set them up around feeders or what have you. And then finally, we're going to hear from our Swedish Patreon member, Michael, and he's going to share his recipe for how to make beaverhoit. And basically, that is a flavored vodka, and the vodka is flavored with castor glands from a beaver. So that's interesting, isn't it? It's not something you see every day there or taste every day. So I think that's going to be interesting to try. I'll have to try that. And I don't know. That's I guess it's just because I've skinned so many of them. But, you know, I was talking to my good friend Clint Locklear about that recipe because, as you know, he's a big lure maker and bait maker and all of that. And he told me that beaver castor is actually an ingredient in Coca-Cola. Which that was news to me. I know that they use beaver castor in perfume and cologne and cosmetics, women's cosmetics, and all of that kind of stuff, because they use it as I believe a fixative or a base ingredient. But I had no idea that it was in Coca-Cola, and I had no idea that people used it to flavor vodka. So We've got a busy show, but before we get started, let me say thank you to our sponsor, Mr. Brian McKee of SouthernSnares.com. And Brian has been out in Idaho, chilling out like a potato out there, and he's back home now, and I'm sure he's busy following up on all of those irons that he has in the fire. And so if you're looking for baits or lures or snares or supplies, give him a call, and I promise you he'll take care of you. Now, It was interesting. I got an email from a gentleman, just to deviate from our timeline a little bit. I got an email from a guy, and he had done exactly what I told him to do. He wanted to make snares, learn to make snares. And he was coming out of the prepper community, the picture wire and brass wire snare, you know, genre. And I said, what you need to do is go to Southern Snares and order you some quality snares to see what a quality snare is. And then that will give you a target to shoot for when you go to build your snares. And what was interesting is he emailed me and he said, you know, I got the snares from Brian and I got the components and I've put my snares together and I can't get them to do like his do. And I thought that was, I got a little chuckle out of that. I'm like, yeah, it's there's a little more to it than just buying parts. You know, what do the old commercial used to say, parts is parts. So anyway, the guy's going to mail me one of the snares that he's trying to emulate and then his. And I told him I'd take a look at it and see what's going on. Why are his not like Brian's? So that's interesting. That, you know, I don't mind doing that. But anyway, let's talk economics. You know, we have we've been in this this virus situation, this virus scam or whatever you want to call it. Everybody knows my feelings on it. And I was reading an article the other night up in New York. I think it was over half of the, you know, everybody knows over the half of the deaths in the United States have come out of New York and New Jersey. And the thing is out of those in New York, that huge number, about half of them are from nursing homes. And here's the crazy thing. The governor of New York, Governor Cuomo, ordered nursing homes to accept COVID-19 positive people. I just thought, you know, here are the liberals locking healthy people down, destroying healthy businesses, doing everything they can to crush the deplorables and ruin Trump's economy. And the most vulnerable, elderly, sick people we have, the ones in nursing homes that cannot live alone anymore, what did they do? What does the government of New York do? They put COVID-19 positive people in the nursing homes with all the other elderly sick people. And they just turned the nursing homes into slaughterhouses. I've always tell people, don't attribute anything to malice that can be attributed to stupidity, but nobody is that stupid. Nobody is that stupid. And so what have we done? We've added trillions and trillions of dollars to the national debt, to the Federal Reserve balance sheet, and this is money that can never be paid back. Mathematically, we are over the event horizon going into the black hole. You know, if you study space and physics and black holes, you know, the black hole is a star that's collapsed in on itself, and it's so powerful that even photons, even light photons, can't escape. So it's black. You know, the gravity is so strong it's sucking light back down into itself. And any object that gets too close, it's like getting close to a whirlpool. You know, you can go by a whirlpool, you know, paddle by it, but if you get too close, you're going to get sucked into the whirlpool. Well, that's what a black hole is. You get too close and it sucks all matter into it. And that's what our debt has turned into. We've gone over that event horizon where the gravity has us and we can never, ever get out of this hole that we're in without a complete reset, which is why you need to be buying metal, precious metals. But anyway, and I've talked in the past about how I lived in South America, in Bolivia, during the 1980s, and how I lived through 20,000% per year inflation, hyperinflation. And I've explained, I've done entire episodes on that. I've done videos on it on my YouTube channel, on how to handle cash and how to live through those instances. Well, Mauricio sent me a long email, and I'm going to read some of it to you. Because he lived through similar situations, and had very similar experiences. He said, "Hi Tim, as you know, my name is Mauricio and I live in Spain. However, I wasn't born there. My grandparents were from Italy and from Spain, and they went to South America after World War II. And so I was born in Uruguay. And let me just say, that was a very common thing. You know, Europe was chewed up after World War II. There wasn't a whole lot going on there. There wasn't a whole lot to look forward to as far as anything like that is concerned. So a lot of people picked up and left, and that's how that happens. And he continues, he says, Uruguay is a beautiful little, green, almost totally rural, flat pasture type of country. It has 3 million people, and about half of them are in the capital city of Montevideo. He said, I'm going to tell you the truth, though, about this country, which is obviously different from the story that the tourism industry sells to the world. Despite that Uruguay has many good things, the fact is that Uruguay is a hell of a country to make a living and have a family in, especially in the cities and suburbs. Crime, drugs, poverty, unemployment, ghettos, just like you said in one of your videos, a real third world cesspool. So I decided to come to Spain 2 years ago with my wife and two kids, 4 years and 2 years old, to try and have a better life. I'm 24 years old, and I could say that this is a better place to be. Now I live in a rural area, got a job, and it's a quiet place to be. However, if you don't know it, Spain also has many bad things too. But having been raised in a third world country, seeing many things here that don't happen, it leads me to appreciate the value of little things that make life better. Like being able to take a walk with my kid in the woods and not be afraid of having to fight for my life over a pair of shoes. Now let me just stop and interrupt here because it's interesting. He came from a third world cesspool of a country where if you went for a walk in the woods, you were taking your life into your hands because they would kill you for a pair of shoes. Sort of like Detroit or New York City where packs of youths will descend upon somebody who has a nice pair of tennis shoes, and they will beat them up, stab them, shoot them, kill them, or whatever for the pair of shoes. It's almost like areas of this country are third world cesspools. But I just thought that parallel was very interesting. He said also the fact of being born and growing up in a wild place led me to be able to better see how people live their lives here in Spain, and what differences are the guys of my age who have actually been seeing a totally different reality. And what he's talking about is, you know, he grew up in a country in South America, and now he goes to Spain, goes to Madrid in the city, and he's dealing with millennials who have no idea what reality is. You know, just completely divorced from reality. And then he goes on, he talks about how when he was younger, he had sort of his eureka moment with self-sufficiency and prepping when he got a hold of an SAS survival manual, and how he started to go and study wild plants and started eating wild plants and began hunting pigeons with slingshots, fishing, you know, and started setting small traps and different things like that, and really educating himself and getting out there. And he goes on and talks about how in his current country in Spain, trapping is completely illegal, despite the fact that there are areas that really need trapping to control the population of wildlife that's out of whack. And he's talking about, you know, he was telling me how, you know, if you get caught snaring a rabbit, it can be a $3,000 fine. And one guy, was actually sent to prison for snaring a deer. He got caught snaring a deer, and he did prison time for that. And then he ends up, summarizing his traps, and he has 14 traps. He goes into, what type of traps. He has some old Blake and Lamb jump traps, number 3 jumps and number 4 jumps and all of that. And it's interesting to read all of that. He's talking about how it's very difficult to find traps over there because the majority of the Spanish traps are old. They're rusted, and the European models are nothing compared to, you know, what we have available here. So anyway, and you know, he it's quite a long email here, but the reason I mention this is you still have time to buy any and all of the snares and traps that you desire, and you have access to the best snares and traps in the entire world. The people, if you live in the United States, and most of the people listening to this do, if you live in this country, you have no excuse. I have people contacting me from Europe trying to buy 4 traps, 3 traps, 6 traps. I have people contacting me from other countries that want traps disassembled and mailed in pieces so that when they go through customs, you know, it's not a trap that won't get seized. This is just some tough love, people. There is, if you're listening to this and you're not prepped with what you need on traps, shame on you. You've got people writing from all over the world, going to great lengths, and they pay a lot of money for this stuff because the shipping, international shipping on pieces of steel ain't cheap. So, you know, just keep that in mind. You need to make sure you have at least that base covered, 'cause comparatively speaking, traps are a cheap investment. So, the next thing I want to talk about, you know, I talked last episode on episode 200 about people, having a resurgence or an increase of people asking about small conibears, and how I was surmising that people are doing a lot of backyard trapping, a lot of state park trapping, and things like that, taking squirrels and other small game, hence the sudden interest in the small conibears. And I got to tell you, man, I love squirrel. I love it. It's absolutely wonderful meat. If you offered me venison or squirrel, I would take squirrel. That's just me. But we've got two segments here that we're going to do on small conibears, and the first was just sent to me by Eric, and Eric comes to us from the frozen north. And sometimes I look at the weather up there, and I don't know how those guys do it. I really don't. But Eric has been using. He's a big proponent of number 55 and number 60 BMI conibears. And the number 55 and 60s, they're smaller conibears than a 110. A 110 is a 4x4, and so the 55 is 3.5x4, and the number 60 is the same size trap, but it's just got a double spring. It's got 2 springs on it instead of one. And what he basically emailed me and was telling me that he had set some of these things up and had done some game camera footage of them, and was watching how animals reacted to bait. And where he is, they're doing a lot of marten trapping, and they use them in boxes. So they build a wooden box, and they put the bait in the back of the box, and then they put the conibear in the front, typical box set. And the animal has to go through the conibear to get to the bait that's pinned to the back of the box. Now, traditional thought, the traditional conventional wisdom, I should say, has always been to build the box deep, put the bait way in the back so that the animal has to go completely through the trap to get to the bait. In other words, you don't want the animal just reaching through the trap to get the bait right behind it, but you want him to have to completely enter the box. And what Eric found in his area by doing game camera studies was that most of the time the animals were caught when they triggered the trap, when they were backing out, or when they were trying to wiggle the bait free with their heads side to side. And what he found was that by shortening the box, his catch rate went up. And I find this fascinating because this jives with game camera footage that I have on raccoons when I was doing this in Alabama. And so what I found was, you know, on my Belial 220s, I put circle triggers on all my Belials. You can get on my YouTube channel and see that. But I've got game camera footage of these coons not only going completely through a 220, but even with my smaller circle trigger, which is about a 5-inch in diameter circle, big coons were able to squeeze through there and go and get the bait in the back of the wooden box, and they would be caught when they tried to back up because their elbows would hit the circle trigger, triggering the trap. The whole time I did that study, I don't think I had one coon get caught going in. They were caught coming out. Now, I had one reason that I didn't do a lot with boxes and conibears was I had a lot of footage of coons climbing over the top, trying to stand on top of the box, trying to go around the back, look at it from the back. And what they were doing is they wanted the bait, but they didn't want to go in. They didn't want to go all the way in. And this is dovetailing exactly with what Eric sent me. And what he did is when he shortened that box and he pinned the bait to the rear wall of the box, what he found was the animal was more likely to go for the bait because they did not have to fully commit and go all the way inside the box. They could stick their head and their front shoulders in to the box and get the bait. And of course, the bait was secured, and then they would start, you know, thrashing their head back and forth and pulling, and that's when they would trigger the trap. And so you see, this is the kind of golden information that only comes from setting this stuff up, putting a camera in front of it, watching it, and then experimenting. Because I promise you, you get on any of the trapping forums, and none of them are going to tell you to shorten the box. None of them. And of course, the wonderful masters that make the laws, they have all kind of dictates about how deep your box has. You know, they make you have like a 2-foot deep box in some areas, and then you got to put the trap a foot into the box. So your trap's got to be 12 inches back into the box, and you aren't going to catch crap. You know, that's just ridiculous. So, but anyway, I thought that was great stuff. Eric, thank you for sharing that. And I thought I would just sort of share my personal experience that sort of jives with that. So now, speaking of small conibears and bait, we have a submission from Jordan. And we haven't heard from Jordan in a while, but Jordan is going to... Now, he was using cages, not conibears, but he was using cage traps and catching squirrels. And I want to share his input on how he was catching them, because this is something that I never would have considered. So let's hear what Jordan has to say.
Hey, Tim. Jordan here. It's been a long time since I've contributed. And honestly, I've really been listening to everyone else's input. It blows me away, this group of people, and what you have here, and the knowledge, the vast well of knowledge that comes from a lot of these people. It just blows my mind. I feel like I need to contribute something. It's very, very simple, but I've been thinking about it for a while, and I need to share some of my experiences in regards to squirrels and catching squirrels. I've got to say they're probably one of the hardest things for me to catch. I mean, they're the acrobats of the woods. I've tried 110s. I've tried the little have a heart specifically meant for squirrel traps. I've tried different baits, peanut butter, pistachios, actual peanuts. I mean, the list goes on and on. I started noticing several years ago that when I would use a big have a heart style trap for raccoons, I would bait them with apple slices. I always had really good luck with that. Well, lo and behold, I kept catching squirrels pretty consistently, mind you. And time and time again, catching squirrels, particularly in the summer months when it's pretty warm. I don't know what it is about the apple slices, but I have a feeling that they feel a little bit more comfortable around these bigger size cages, and they have more room to kind of get in there and investigate without feeling squeezed. And it only makes sense. I mean, they have a lot of freedom in the treetops. They can do whatever they want. But in lieu of the times right now, I think it's important to use anything and everything at our disposal to be able to catch this abundant game without spending a lot of time and valuable energy. Anyway, just wanted to share that. I hope everybody out there is doing well and surviving.
Well, thank you, Jordan. And I have to admit, I never would have considered apples to be squirrel bait. You know, when you think of squirrels, you think of nuts and peanut butter and seeds and corn cobs and all of that kind of stuff. But who would have thought apples? So that may be something, whether you're using a conibear or a cage, if you're trying to put some squirrel meat on the table, consider baiting with apples. And if you're using conibears, try shortening your boxes up. Try shortening your containers up and really necking them down. And see how that works. And just keep notes and judge that for yourself. So anyway, if you are a Patreon supporter, please stay tuned for the second half of tonight's show. And if you're not, I would like to urge you to at least consider becoming one. You can go to patreon.com/meattrapper and check it all out. And basically, it just helps support the show, and it allows you to become a member of the Meat Trapper tribe, which, believe me, we have some truly, truly quality individuals that share a lot of information on the comments and the forums there. It's really a great... It's a great community, and I'm very honored to have such people around me. And there's also a lot of bonus content there. You get access to all 200 back episodes. And there's 40 plus bonus posts that you know, are movies, free PDF catfishing books, Green Beret Gourmet resistance trapping videos, and all of that kind of stuff. But really, you know, it's not something to join to get stuff. That's not the idea. You know, the idea is to become part of a community, and with that community membership, there are benefits. You know, I've got the bucket snare video on there for free, the alligatoring video, which I think is a really good video. Shows you everything about catching alligators and all of that kind of stuff. So anyway, if you're a member, stay tuned, and if not, we'll see you next time.
Shake a man's hand and look him in the eye. Is that so hard to do? Don't blow smoke, don't tell lies, son, just tell the truth. There's rumors going round all around town. You've been talking shit. You say I can't play and you say I can't sing, and my songs, they won't be hits. I've never been a violent man, I'd rather be drinking beer. But that's a name Granddaddy gave me, and let me make it clear, you're gonna shut your mouth, or say it to my face, or I'm gonna use your ass like a broom to sweep this place. Go on and call up your friends, you better bring a few, 'cause I come from a different time when the men were all old school. Seen your kind a thousand times, all baby-faced and cute. No calluses on your hands, no scuffs upon your boots. You probably think the holler is a rap song in your car. You don't know the first damn thing about playing these smoky bars. You're gonna shut your mouth, or say it to my face, or I'm gonna use your ass like a broom to sweep this place. Go on and call up your friends, you better bring a few, 'cause I come from a different time when the men were all old school. I don't care if you want to speak your mind, son. You got something to say? All I ask you, stand up, grow some balls, and say it to my face. 'Cause if I keep hearing whispers, son, you're still talking shit. You're gonna owe me gas money to get back over here, and it's gonna be talk shit, get hit. You're gonna shut your mouth, say it to my face, or I'm gonna use your ass like a broom to sweep this place. Go on and call up your friends, but you better bring a few, 'cause I come from a different time when the men were all old school. I'm from a different time. 'Cause my granddaddy sure was old school. It's up to you, son. Let's talk shit, get hit. What's that? I don't hear nothing. Yeah, that's what I thought.
I'm waiting.